Ask Catherine. Thank you again for the links and articles. I'm getting recommendations for up to 40 and 50 books and documentaries a month. And if you look at the volume, I try and read and watch a lot. I certainly can't read and watch the full flow that comes in. One good one that I did put up on the website is a new documentary about 9/11 called Incontrovertible, which is about the fall of Building 7 and the fact that the BBC on multiple occasions announced that Building 7 had fallen a significant time before it did. It's quite interesting to watch. Solomon Brothers was in Building 7 along with the SEC and some other government offices of agencies investigating fraud on and shenanigans on Wall Street. Solomon was sold by Buffett to Travelers in 1997-98, and then Travelers and Citibank merged. So you had sort of Buffett and Citibank's government and mortgage securities through 2001, as a lot of juicy records in those offices. I've recently so let me go to the first question. Catherine, I've recently re received and have enjoyed reading the Solera report entitled Space, Here We Go, Global Investment Takes Off. I'm hoping that you can continue to focus on the most promising companies that merit a closer look from a prospective investment standpoint. What plans do you have in that regard, and what can Solera offer to further assist subscribers operationalize this information about 3.0 and the movement in the direction of the space economy? From a more terrestrial perspective, I continue to read with great interest about the increasing great strides being made to consolidate the efforts of European and Asian economic interests to, as manifest in the new Silk Road infrastructure mega project. So I'm also wondering if you've been able to accomplish anything similar as you've done Space 3.0 with respect to the new Silk Road. If not immediately, do you agree this would be a fruitful area of devoting time, effort, and study? I know we addressed this a little bit last week. We are updating the list of space companies that we publish in the annual wrap-up. We're doing it on the new website that will be launched this summer, so it's not on the existing website. But when we launch the new one, we will have an updated list of space companies. We finished going through all the European ones and identified which are publicly traded. And now, right now, we're proceeding to go through all of the Asian space companies and identify which ones of those are publicly traded, although many of them appear to be only traded in Hong Kong or the Chinese markets or the Asian markets. So I would like by the end of the year to have identified all the publicly traded space-based companies, and I've been working on a screen to do joint through Solera Investment Advisory Services with a money manager, a screen on two screens, one of which will be on the space-based economy. I would love to do the same thing for the Silk Road, but that would be a next year project, and it's going to be a little bit trickier because again, many of those companies are not traded in the U.S. They're traded in the European or Asian markets. In follow-up to the following in prior question, please look at the following link, the ultimate credibility of the source notwithstanding. It's a link to something on the new Silk Road. Greetings. The link below from David Stockman. No implicit endorsement of credibility, reliability, or authenticity. Although one of his major touts is that David Stockman is the ultimate Washington insider turned iconoclast, he began his career in Washington as a young man and quickly rose, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then he sends some links. This type of data reminds me of similar genre of data available via John Williams and his website, which appears to be very considered and thoughtful. I'd be interested to hear your views on the tension between government statistics and versus shadow statistics, a la John Williams, which in my experience is often at the heart of the inability to conduct an intelligent discussion between a principal and a current or prospective asset manager or an investment advisor, each of which parties may be utilizing, thus resulting in vastly different perspectives and reference points fundamentally conditioned by which data the particular party may be relying on. Indeed, many mainstream investment commentators and certainly the mainstream financial media present information that is predominantly relying upon government and/or big business economic data and reporting. Does this fit into a variant of another form of fear porn? Who is to be believed? The government statistics are clearly manipulated and are not reliable. I think Williams does a very good job of trying to get at the real numbers. I'm a subscriber and big fan of his work. And as you can see from the archive, he's been on the Salieri Report several times. So I don't consider John Fearporn at all. I consider him to be very, very credible. Now, both Stockman and Williams do convert what they see, including in terms of real numbers, into interpretations of what to expect that I don't agree with. So John Williams will often predict that the dollar is going to collapse or there's going to be hyperinflation. I don't agree with him. And I think that at the heart of the disagreement between us is I'm looking at the black budget and all the different things they have to keep the game going. And Williams is not looking at the same kind of covert information. So I keep saying it's not going to collapse, it's going to slow burn, or the dollar's going higher, or going to stay up. And frankly, that's what has happened. And I think it's because Williams kind of looking at the, you know, the real numbers on the overt economy, but there's a whole world of the hidden financial system and the black budget that he's not looking at or appreciating. Anyway, but I would say his statistics are very good, and I use them all the time. Greetings. I apologize for the relative disorganization of this inquiry, but the question engendered here are so broad and sweeping and diverse that I suppose the best way for the issues to be posed is to enumerate the various sub-issues. Then there's a long series of different questions about different stories on China. And essentially what the poster is referring to is a number of different phenomena. Let me describe them. First of all, there is massive cooperation between China and the U.S. behind the scenes. I would strongly recommend that if you want to understand that cooperation, you read Steve Rocha's book, Unbalanced. We have a great interview with Steve in the archives, and that's one of the best books on understanding the U.S.-China relationship. Another thing you're watching is that there is an effort globally to build out the global gold inventories and trading systems. It's part of moving towards a digital currency, and China is an important part of that. But you're watching a global gold trading system coming up and a rebalancing of the inventories. And that is at the heart. You know, there's competition inside of it, but it's a major cooperation, and I think coming top down. You're also seeing China go into space in a big way. They now have 100,000 more people in their space program than we do. As I say in my annual wrap-up, I believe that the reason we rebalanced the global economy was to create the capacity globally to free up enough capacity to go into space. So at the deepest level, I think there's enormous cooperation. If you watch the movie The Martian, you'll see an effort to really promote that kind of cooperation. Now, the Chinese are building out the military and satellite systems and financial systems they need to support and build out a global currency. And there's great competition about all of that. And so that's another part of the different stories that you're seeing. And there's tremendous tension as they do that, because as Roche describes, for a long time, they have been using their savings to basically buy treasuries and feed our consumerism. And now they're shifting and using their savings to build up the Silk Road and invest in the emerging markets and things that create capacity away from the United States. You know, whereas the first increased our power, the second diminishes our power, and there's tremendous tension. And it's what essentially China is restructuring its economy to be far more independent, and that restructuring is going to have a major reverberation on the global economy and global politics for quite some time to come. Part of that is that we have different trading partners that, as the size of China trades grows, that trade passes the U.S. in terms of dollar importance as partners to those trading partners. And that's why with Trans-Pacific Partnership and all these other agreements, we're trying to rope everybody back in and tie them into our system. And so the question comes up in the tensions with China, whose infrastructure, whose equity, you know, who's getting the equity pop out of different Chinese activities? And more they're saying they get the pop. So that's where the tension lies. But there's several things going on at the same time. Some are competitive, some are cooperative. And I think it's important to see the sort of deeper cooperative game going on behind the scenes, which I think is what you do see because you alluded to it. Somebody sent me a link for a piece by Samuel Bryan on why gold confiscation is highly unlikely today, and I agree with most of the points in the article. I think gold confiscation is highly unlikely to happen today. Someone also sent, "Hi, Catherine. I wanted to tell you how I manage watering plants. I use a pendulum and ask the plant if it wants water. It takes the guesswork out of it. It's a great idea. I'm in the middle of prototyping EMF protection devices with Jason Bawden-Smith, and it's very interesting. As a result, I've had a massive orchid revival. All my orchids, which had gone dormant, have suddenly all blossomed. So I've got orchids all over the house in beautiful bloom. So the question for me is, how do I make sure I water them properly?" So that's very good advice. "Dear Catherine, within our media, there seems to be a hierarchy of how things operate. It appears that the prestigious national news networks and media are the only ones who can break national news stories to everyone, and then the local news outlets can only repeat these same stories while remaining focused on delivering the local news. Is that your understanding of how our media system operates?" I don't really have an understanding of how the media operates. It's true that the local papers are essentially simply reprinting a lot of what they get from the centralized systems that feed them. There's surprisingly little local news in them, however. If a media source is not credible, I just don't use it other than to use it to track what the pro-centralization team is doing and saying. You get some news outlets, such as The Economist or The Wall Street Journal, that have good coverage of the overt economy, parts that are easily discussed on an open basis in the official reality. And because that's such a big part of the economy, they're very, very good and very useful. At the same time, there's a whole world of things they don't cover, so it's not a zero-one issue. But if I just don't worry about how the corporate media operates because I don't think it's credible. So we had an important statistic that I put up on the website this week, an article saying that the people working in online media surpassed traditional media recently. Wouldn't surprise me if that's true. I think most of the problems that are happening in the world could only happen, they couldn't be happening without massive amounts of propaganda, mind control, and corrupt media. So I would recommend losing all interest in the corrupt media and what they do and how they do it. It's one of the most powerful acts that you and I can take.